This podcast is brought to you by Cedar HR Solutions. Support our sponsors, Time Clock It and YourHIPAAtraining.com. Visit them on the web.
Hello, Doctor. This is Paul Edwards, and I'm the CEO of Cedar HR Solutions, and I'm joined today by Kurt Tuller. Doctor, today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, or Kurt and I are going to talk to you a little bit about the difference between an employee and an independent contractor. And we're going to really bring this into context for you because the question I most often get from doctors out there is about this classification. And classification falls into two categories. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kurt. We're looking at the IRS and we're looking at the Department of Labor.
Primarily speaking, although a bunch of other agencies can get involved, those are going to be the two that tend to come after you.
And don't they both have a test, what they call a test?
Well, the test is actually broken out into all of the different 50 states have their own. They've basically been chartered by the federal government. There's a large multi-million dollar grant program that was handed out to the federal Department of Labor and the IRS to work together. And then they work with incorporating that into the states. And so the states come up with their own tests. What we've essentially done is taken an amalgam of those tests to give you a broad understanding. Now, we can go really deep down this rabbit hole and kind of delve in, but I don't think that's what we want to do. What I think we should do is look at the basics of the test that they have.
Okay, so when we say test, really it's a list.
Exactly.
And the IRS's and the Department of Labor's are not exactly the same, but there are several things that are on both of their lists. And then, like you said, and like it is for all HR laws, there are state-specific rules. And in fact, some states make it very, very problematic if you want to make someone an independent contractor.
Exactly. And I'm really sorry if Massachusetts, you're one of those.
Yeah, you're one of those. In California, they make it very difficult. So let's begin with the reason why most of you out there are going to want to answer to this question is because you've got someone in your sights and you're getting ready to hire them as an associate, someone to help you out in your office. And in this case, I'm really going to get narrow with this, and I'm going to describe this person as a doctor who is coming to do general dentistry in your general dentistry practice. That sound about right, Kurt?
That's what I hear a lot of.
Okay. And so let's jump in. Are they an employee or are they an independent contractor, Kurt?
Well, almost certainly they're going to end up being an employee. Mm-hmm. But when we get a call like this and we get them with pretty solid frequency in the Solution Center, we want to run through the test and make sure. And the first thing that I tend to ask about is control, because one of the things that the doctor is often concerned about when they're, especially if they're hiring someone new, someone fresh out of law school or fresh out of dental school.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, got him. you go to dental school, not law school.
Yep.
If you're hiring someone new, you want to make sure that they're doing a good job, that they're following the right process, and that they're behaving in the way that you want a doctor in your practice to do so.
Okay, so I want to touch on that very quickly. We do associate agreements here. Kurt, you're well aware of that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that we do in the agreement is we really do gain control over the relationship with the doctor. So if you're bringing in an associate in, you want them to follow your protocols when it comes to billing. You don't want them giving out treatment when no one's confirmed that the patient can actually pay for it. There's all sorts of protocols in place. So you actually do want to exercise what you just described as control.
Exactly. And that level of control is important, even down to the specifics of when they're going to be there. You want to be able to tell the person that you got to be here at 9 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You got to be here on some Saturdays. And that's part of the test. And really that control gets broken off into a whole bunch of things. But the one that I deal most frequently with is what I call behavioral control, right? The way in which someone does their work. Mm-hmm. One of the hallmarks of being an independent contractor is that you are putting out this product, and the independent contractor puts out a product, the buyer looks at that product and accepts or rejects it. They're not involved in the making of it. They're not involved in how or the technique. What I like to explain, and this is going to date me a little bit, if you guys have seen Karate Kid, right? Daniel-san comes and he gets told exactly how to paint the fence, exactly how to wax the car. That's an employee. If he just said, paint the fence, and then the fence is painted and he's happy or not, that's an independent
contractor. Oh, I really want to get into this a little bit, because not only did Daniel-san, was he told what to do, but his sensei gave him the paint, gave mm-hmm. him the paintbrush,
exactly.
Told him what color to paint it. I mean, He completely controlled everything.
And then when he screwed it up, when he stopped doing it the right way, he came out and corrected him.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. So that's kind of the core concept of behavioral control, right? If your employee screws up, you can correct their behavior. You can bring that corrective action in.
Let's talk about something else about the independent contractor, and that is that the independent contractor can realize a profit and a loss. So the example I often give is you hire someone to mow your lawn on a regular basis. He brings his own lawnmower. If his lawnmower breaks down, he doesn't come knock on your door and say, oh, man, my lawnmower's broken down. What do I do about this? You don't say, well, it's a spark plug. Here's a spark plug. You don't pay for his lawnmower to be repaired. You don't typically control how he's going to mow the lawn. He starts where he's going to start. He starts whatever time of day he starts. He gets it done. And the profit and loss comes into play because you give him, say, $50 to mow your lawn. The days of $12 lawn mowing are over. and if it takes him 8 hours to mow your lawn or it takes him 2 hours to mow your lawn, that's not your issue. That is his profit and loss issue.
Exactly. With some small exceptions, which aren't really relevant in the dental practice sense, if you're paying them hourly, that's a big red flag. If you're paying them for the result, then that's a little bit easier. Now, that's not to say that a commission gets you out of it.
Nope.
But it's more to say that that's how the state or the federal government is going to look at it. Are you getting paid for the amount of work, not the nature of the output?
Now, I want to go back to where I started, which was we described the relationship. We said a general dentist or a dentist coming to do the work of a general dentist practice. So how does that play in?
Well, you want them, if you are trying to find them to be an independent contractor, you want them to be doing something that your office doesn't do, right?
Right.
For the same reason that if you hire someone to do exactly like if you are a general dentist office and you bring in a hygienist, they're going to be an employee too. But if you bring in a prosthodontist, if you bring in someone who is a specialist and that they do something outside, then that's more likely to be an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. It's not definitive. It's part of the test, but it's more likely.
I'm sensing a pattern here that... It sounds like the IRS or the Department of Labor has not given me a set of checkboxes, and if I can fill out all the checkboxes, I'm in the clear.
Yeah, although actually literally filling out the checkboxes makes it more protected.
Uh-huh.
Going through and recording the fact that you went and tested it gives you some good faith
protection.
Even if you get it wrong. Mm-hmm. We want you to do the test. But here's the thing. The IRS has had its budget cut for the last 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. They're hurting for cash. And they know that if they invest money in something that's typically misclassified, they can get those back taxes, penalties, interest, all of that stuff that they haven't had, and they can start to fund themselves. A dollar invested in auditing and control in this can yield multiple dollars back for the government.
Right. So that's why they care.
Exactly.
It's not so much that they care about the relationship as they care about the tax dollars. Because when you classify someone as an independent contractor, you don't have to pay their matching taxes for Social Security. You're not withholding their taxes. You're not doing any of those things.
Yeah. And most probably painful to the government is that they're not getting their taxes likely until later. So that there's a timing aspect as well. If that person isn't prepaying, if that independent contractor isn't prepaying, they're not getting it until the end of the year, which, you know, money today is worth more than money tomorrow.
You know, in the worst instance that I saw around this, the way that the doctor actually got in trouble, the host doctor, the owner doctor got in trouble, was that the associate doctor was not paying his taxes properly. And he got audited, and he had not been paying his self-employment taxes. He had not been doing a lot of things. And when they audited him, they discovered they'd been working for the host doctor, I think it was 6, 7, 8 years. And what the IRS basically did was get the associate doctor to attest to the fact that he was working inside of an employment relationship. In other words, you're right, he did control me. You're right, he wasn't withholding. He did tell me when to come to work. I didn't provide any of my tools. I didn't show a profit and loss. And what they were able to do with that was reclassify him as an employee, and they immediately went after the host doctor for the back taxes and, of course, the penalties that he owed.
Exactly.
And I asked a CPA about this one time, and he said, well, they're always going to go where the money is. They knew that the associate didn't have any money. He wasn't paying his taxes. They could see what he had. They were going after the money.
And that's what they're going to chase down, and that's how they're going to follow that trail back. And most importantly, I talk to a lot of doctors who will call me up and say, hey, there's this situation, I want to hire this independent contractor. And I say, hey, this person probably isn't one. And they're like, well, I've been doing this for years. And I said, yeah, of course you've been doing it for years. The thing is, the government, we have a compliance-based collection method for taxes. They don't find out about it until something goes wrong.
Until they find out about it.
Yeah, and then they find out because someone got hurt. They find out because someone wasn't paying their taxes. They find out because someone gets mad, right? You throw down with your associate doctor, he gets mad, he figures it out, or your hygienist, and now the IRS is coming after you, Department of Labor is coming after you, wage and hours coming after you, and now the employee themselves, even if they agree to it, could be filing a lawsuit for unpaid overtime, you know, back wages, whatever.
Let's get into that agreeing to it. Another common pushback that you'll get is, well, I've talked to my accountant, and we're willing to sign anything that absolves you, doctor. So I'm the independent contractor, and I'll absolve you, doctor, of any responsibility. So effectively, if we get caught, don't worry about it. I won't blame you. Does that work?
It doesn't. Any more than you could say, you know, walk into a facility where they're juggling knives and say, hey, I'm not going to, I promise not to sue you. I'm going to assume all of the risk.
Give me the knives.
Yeah, give me the knives now. because it's against public policy for someone to be put in a dangerous position, just like this one, it's against public policy for someone to waive their
right.
duty to pay taxes.
Right.
They can't waive that. They can't protect you.
Right. So it's not worth the paper. And in fact, it's evidence. Because you can actually use that to prove that you guys were trying not
to. That you had a good faith reason to think that it was wrong.
Okay, so I think what we're getting from this is it's very, very difficult to make someone an independent contractor. But I think to best explain this, let's give some examples in a, say, dental office and medical office where you could hire someone and they probably likely would pass the independent contractor test.
Okay. Let's get into a couple examples. Before we do, I just want to say, because I'm a lawyer, it always depends. And we always want you to ask the question. We always want to go through the test. But generally speaking, for a dental office, if you have someone that comes in, let's say once or twice a month, maybe an endodontist who does some specialist work, who you have a couple of patients that you refer to them, and they come in, and if there were a patient scheduled, they do the work, they get paid a certain amount for that work, and then they leave.
So even in that case, you have a little bit of control. You're like, dude, you got to show up on Thursdays. It's the third Thursday of the month, and we schedule patients for you from 9 till 2 as per our agreement. So you have some control there, but you're not going to be telling them how to do the treatment or have any control over them while they're there, really.
Exactly. And if your patients come out, their patients come out, and they're mad about how the bedside manner was or how it ended up or how long it took or how much it hurt, you can then find a new endodontist to do that work. But you're not going to be necessarily going in there. You're not going to write them a corrective action and say, hey, you should have done A rather than B.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's the kind of control that you're going to look to have over that. You're also going to want to think about, does that endodontist work at other offices? Now, if he's only working there once or twice a month, that's pretty likely. It's almost it's kind of like almost a chair rental where they come in, they do some specialist work, and then they leave.
So they can realize a profit at loss, because if you don't have any patients, you have patients scheduled and they don't show up, you don't pay them anything. You don't pay them. They would actually have a loss for that day.
Yeah.
Well, you said the orthodontist or endodontist works in another office, but I want to come to the one that I hear most often, which is the general dentist who I'm about to hire to work in my practice works at other offices. Doesn't that make him an independent contractor?
Simple answer to that one is no.
No.
He is an employee because he's doing what you guys are doing. In the same way that if you brought in a front desk worker.
Right, and she worked at another office, or an accountant, or anyone who works at multiple places. Just because they work someplace else doing what they do does not make them an independent contractor in any way, shape, or form.
Not at all. Now, in looking towards another example, I know that you mentioned before a medical practice.
Mm-hmm.
Something along these lines, if you're practice called in a physical therapist, right? It's not a physical therapy practice, but they call them in and, again, once or twice a month, and you refer particular patients who you think might benefit from this type of treatment.
Yep.
That physical therapist does their magic, and then the patients come out. Again, you know, you're looking for a particular result, but not going after the method. that person is probably going to be.
We see that in some rural practices where they'll bring in, they'll have Thursdays, third Thursdays physical therapy. They'll have patients and the patients don't have to drive all the way to where the physical therapy is, which could be 100 miles away. So the physical therapist comes to them.
Yeah,
so.
And the physical therapist, especially if it's an office that doesn't specialize in it, may be bringing their own tools. They may be bringing that, you know, massage bed that they need or, you know, whatever other tools they need. They're providing it. Again, another hallmark of an independent contractor.
Okay, so I think if we draw any conclusions from today's conversation is it's very, very difficult to classify someone who does the work that you normally do as an independent contractor. The reason why is because the IRS cares. The reason why they care is because they're losing tax dollars and write-offs and all sort of things to the relationship. And in fact, they've been incentivized. You mentioned that program.
Yeah, and they have been given money to find money.
Right.
That is not given money to spend money. They're expecting a return on investment. The federal government is expecting to get money back from that. And the only way they're going to do that is if they find people that are messing it up, that are doing, they're coming out on the wrong side, or worse yet, not even doing the test.
Right. So everybody wins. The state wins. Your county wins. The feds win. Everybody gets more taxes.
Well, one person loses.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so today we've been talking about the independent contractor relationship. There are resources on our website that describe the differences in this conversation that we're having. They describe the differences between an employee and an independent contractor and actually lead you down the path towards the checklist that you can find for the feds. And then again, like Kurt said, every situation is different. You definitely want to look at each individual relationship and make sure you have this right. Kurt, if they don't have this right or they suspect that they don't have this right, what do they do? What's the best course?
Well, I'm a little biased. I'd say call the Solution Center and we'd love to help. But
if not us.
Yeah, if not us, then get some legal advice, honestly.
Yep.
Talk to someone who is experienced in employment law. Who
a deals, CPA.
A CPA is a good bet. A tax attorney is a good bet. You know, someone who they trust and someone who, you know, knows this test. If you ask the question and they start hemming and hawing, they're someone who probably isn't a good resource.
Right. Yeah, somebody who's got experience with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for joining us today. Kurt, thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Okay.
Today's podcast was sponsored by YourHIPAAtraining.com, a cloud-based, on-demand HIPAA training and compliance system for your employees and your office. Visit YourHIPAAtraining.com.